Inevitably, when England get knocked out of a major tournament, the talk quickly turns to grassroots development, how English football can produce a crop of players capable of challenging for major honours at these international tournaments. Well, Nick Levitt is the FA National Development Manager. And Nick, thanks for coming on the show today. You went on Twitter yesterday and made some very strong points, because a lot of people at a time like this say, if England are going to get better, if they're going to compete at World Cups, we need more investment at grassroots level. But you've got a slightly different take on that suggestion, haven't you?
Well, I think at times we've got to recognise what the grassroots game does and is there for, and who organises football for young people at a local level. And it's very much aimed at the 99% of kids that are never going to get anywhere near a Sheffield Wednesday or a Sheffield United pitch, because they just play for the love of the game, to be with their mates, to have fun, and that's their motivation and driver for playing. And I think it's very difficult to blame the grassroots game for the failings of the England team, because I think they're so far removed from the two things. And even now, when we look at the England youth teams, we know statistically that all of those players that make it through to the England 16s, 17s, 19s are all in the professional game and within professional club academies by the age of 10, other than the odd outlier at 13, 14. The majority are in the club by then. So I'm not sure we can kind of blame grassroots for that. I don't think there's a reason not to invest in grassroots. We have to keep doing it for those hundreds of thousands of kids that play the game. But when I see people blaming grassroots for the failings of the England team, I kind of get a little bit narked at that. Yes, sorry about that, Rob.
Hey, no problem at all, Nick. Do you think that the issue isn't so much with, you know, the grassroots, with kids who are just playing football, I think, as you put it, to sort of maximise their development and just have fun and have focused learning as they try to get into this game? Because I remember being a young kid one day and getting a football for the first time and just wanting to play football. Do you think the issues are maybe further down the line? It's not that sort of that first time when the kids get out there at grassroots level.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we need to raise the standards of coaching and raise the standards of facilities at a grassroots level, purely for those kids that are playing that, so they can have the best experience possible. Ultimately, what we do at the grassroots game is about helping develop young people. And grassroots football is not about the amount of trophies that you win, it's about the difference that we make to kids' lives. And we're fortunate that we can use football as the vehicle to do that. Now, the kids that have real potential and talent and the chance to go on and play professional football or play for their country, they need to be supported in a slightly different way as they go into the professional game. But absolutely, the heart of everything at grassroots has to be making the game fun for kids, without a shadow of a doubt.
I've absolutely no doubt, Nick, that this weekend I'm going to end up talking to some England fans or maybe some mates who end up saying it's got to be the grassroots level. If that conversation occurs, what should I respond with? Should I talk about perhaps that it's opportunities for players down the line? Should I talk about maybe it's that sort of important coaching time when a young player goes from being a mid-teen to potentially becoming a professional footballer who is going to compete for a first team or reserve level? Is that where the focus needs to be?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's probably a very valid comeback if and when you do have that conversation. We know that the challenge exists at kind of 16 upwards, and the glass ceiling that exists within the professional game. You know, we have to make sure that our young players coming through the professional game are the best they can possibly be, because certainly at the top end, they're competing with players from around the world now, not from just an hour and a half from their local club that they play for. So very much it's about making sure that we've got the best players that break that glass ceiling, that can go on and get the opportunity to play for their local professional club. They're the ones that we've got to support on through it and do as best we can for.
We all want to see technically gifted players who can keep the ball, look very comfortable in possession for this England team. Are we moving in the right direction, would you say, Nick?
Well, I was genuinely quite excited by what I saw. Certainly, the first game, in terms of the attacking play, because I think historically we've been quite criticised for being fairly kind of dull in attack and having a solid defence, then we're never going to concede many. But, you know, when you've got Sterling, Lallana, Barkley, Rooney, you've got some really creative players there that have the ability to open up defences. So I was genuinely excited by what I saw from an attacking flair. We have a responsibility when we're developing teams to also make sure that we develop top-class defenders. And where are the next Rio Ferdinand's, John Terry's coming through in the system? Is John Stones at Everton the next one who could be the next top player? Possibly. So I think we've had a bit of a shift from seeing the creative players of Barcelona and Spain and Ronaldo and such like. And I think we've started to develop our own of that ilk. And you look at the England under-17s that just won the European Championships with players like Pat Roberts at Fulham. There's certainly more of them coming through the system, but we've also got to remember it's a full team game of which people play different roles within the team, and it's about developing all the different players, not just creative attacking ones. But there were certainly lots of green shoots of positive attacking play. It was great.
I saw that tournament you've just referred to there, and I, you know, I was very encouraged watching that young England team. And hey, we won the final on a penalty shootout as well. So I took a lot out of that from a technical level. The English team, it was the Dutch, wasn't it, that we played in the final, was equally as good.
Yeah, absolutely. And I travel with a lot of teams around Europe into competitions and seeing where we're at. I don't think when you benchmark us against other top European countries that we're anywhere near worse than they are. Technically, we are absolutely as good up to 14, 15, 16 as they are, without a shadow of a doubt. And I'm talking about having seen top French, German, Spanish, Dutch teams. You know, when we go to France, for example, the French are just incredibly direct. They're a long ball team at the younger age groups, and it's always really the Dutch are the ones that try and play. So I think we're definitely technically as good, and it comes down to decision-making ultimately that makes the difference at the top end.
We just heard what Chris Waddle had to say, and I'm sure everybody's heard that by now, the rant that he had afterwards. And one of the points he made was that, you know, there are an awful lot of brilliant foreign players playing in English football. I guess you get two sides to that argument. You get the ones who say those players will help our English players. Not only does it breed competition, that they have to be good to get into a team with those top-class, world-class foreign players in the Premier League sides. The other side of the argument is, that are our English players getting enough opportunity? How do you see it?
Well, I think if you look at watching the Premier League, and I have done as a fan for years, you know, there's no doubt English players playing alongside or against the likes of Bergkamp, Zola, Henry can do nothing but marvel at them and learn and develop from them. I think the challenge is we have a lot of incredibly average foreign players that come in that are the quick fix solution, and they're often the ones that stop the progress of young players. And that's probably the shift that we need to make. We need to kind of culturally make sure that the English kids are the ones that get the opportunity to play more at that kind of 18 to 23 age group than bringing in a foreign player, because that ultimately will help the national team. But I certainly understand the balance that Premier League and Football League clubs have, that they're their own entity and they're a business for themselves, and their priority might not be the England team. But 20 million people just watched the last England game, which is certainly a lot more than watch a lot of home football. So there's certainly the interest in the national team still, and I think a lot of people are equally disappointed and devastated as I am as an England fan and what's going on this week.
You're the FA National Development Manager, so has there been sort of a change in the, you know, within the FA sort of plan over the last few years? You know, maybe it's after the World Cup in South Africa, I don't know, maybe it was earlier than that. Was there sort of a moment when the FA said, OK, this is the new direction that we're going to go in, we're going to build around this different infrastructure? We have seen a lot of changes at the FA. You know, there's a new facility now which the England players use at all levels. I imagine there's been a lot of changes to the coaching setup as well. What kind of changes have taken place over the last few years?
Yeah, a number of different things. Certainly from a grassroots perspective, since the end of 2009, we've been developing a new pathway for children to learn and play the game that focuses on skill and technique development, so smaller-sided versions of the game. Previously, we used to put 10-year-old children on the same size pitch as a 26-year-old international, and I don't understand why we used to do that, but we certainly did. So we're going to a lot smaller versions of the game to help develop technique, and also look at a competition pathway that is developmentally appropriate for young people as well. So that's going on at a grassroots level, and all those changes are well on the way to being embedded now. At a national team level, Dan Ashworth, in his role as Director of Elite Development, is very much kind of spearheading. We're probably 6-8 months into developing what he's calling the England DNA. So a very clear coaching, playing and player philosophy about what we stand for as a country. And this, I think, was well underway prior to the World Cup. So this isn't about a knee-jerk reaction or papering over cracks. This is something that we knew we had to do as an organisation and is well under the way. So there's a lot of changes going on. The coaching pathway continues to develop. We're very much kind of leading the way around Europe in youth and age-appropriate coaching qualifications. So if you're involved in working with a young team, the FA Youth Awards now are the best courses that I think that we've got in terms of really helping you understand and develop young players. So there's a huge amount going on in the game, but ultimately this is a 10-year plan, Rob. You know, you can't magically develop new players overnight. It's a bit like gardening. You know, you stick a bulb in the floor and the next day you don't get a flower. It doesn't kind of work like that. It's very much a long-term plan, similar to the Germans did after 98 and 2000. That took them 10 to 12 years for their plans to come through. So things are underway, plans are in place, but I think, as any England fan does, you know, we'll all be disappointed after what we've seen this year.